If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 161, our second show of 2021. I'm Chris, and with me today is...
I am Matt.
And we're going to talk some tech with you. Although that's not Matt's forte. But so, kind of interesting thing going on. You know, we both love NASA and what they do. NASA's actually a customer of mine, so it's fun to see what they do because I get to be part of it to a small, very tiny degree. But a company out of Scottsdale, Arizona, called How Industries, has developed a new power system for microsatellites, since that's the new way of putting satellites into space. They've got grants from NASA and DARPA, and they've created what's called the Thermosat engine. And what it is it flash boils a very tiny amount of distilled water into super hot steam via a thermal condenser, and it uses it as the attitude thruster adjustments for these satellites. It can propel them in different orbits and slow them down and speed them up and move them into different, you know, orientation. And what's cool about it is it's something that's so simple and extremely safe because I won't say water is non-volatile. More people die from H2O poisoning than anything else in the world. It's called drowning. But it's not an explosive that you are putting into a pressurized container and then sending in a rocket into space. It's also a lot lighter than propulsion systems that we've been putting in satellites with combustible fuels and even the ion drives and stuff that run off solar panels. But again, what I think is cool about it, and it's good engineering, is that using water for propulsion is not a new idea, but their implementation of using water for propulsion in satellites is a new innovative idea that is really going to drive what's going on in space even farther. And one of the reasons I talk about this is that the thermostat only weighs 5.4 pounds. So think of that, you know, in the...
So this system is being used, or will be used, on orbit.
Yes.
Not launch system.
No, it's not a launch system. It's on orbit.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. But think about it. At 5.4 pounds, I don't know what the next nearest system, but you'd have to think on some of these satellites, it's got to be a lot more than that.
Issue two for me is, now I don't know how much maneuvering actually goes on once a satellite's in orbit, but how much water's in the tank?
So it is a finite amount, but every time we put a satellite in orbit, the fuel that's in it is a very finite amount. I thought it said in the article... And they use it, I don't think you don't usually use the thrusters very much. You use it to avoid collisions with other space debris. And mainly they use it to deorbit the satellite or adjust the orbit,
right?
You know, slightly. But that's usually an avoid collision type thing.
But again, that comes back to my point. I don't know how much water being fuel, how much fuel does a normal satellite use anyway?
Well, I don't think they use a lot, but you know, over when you look at like the Voyager satellites, they had nuclear fuel, which weighed considerably more than this. And I'm not sure which. I think the Voyager 1 is the one that has spent all of its nuclear fuel, which was a very tiny amount.
2 is the one that's still going.
Yeah, 2 is still going. So in that case, you know, that was pretty efficient. But you're also talking about a satellite that's how many years old now? you know, these CubeSats are, and I'm not talking about a big satellite like a Voyager or something. These are CubeSats. So, you know, it's important that not only is the thruster system small, but that the fuel weight is very little too. So it might carry 5 or 6 pounds of water. What is it? 5 gallons of water or 5 gallons of gas. And I'm assuming 5 gallons of water weigh about the same. And 5 gallons of gas weighs about 30 pounds. Or no, weighs about 60 pounds. So what would 5 gallons, you know, so maybe a gallon of water, you know?
And I guess then the question then becomes, once that water is expended, that's going to be a reason to deorbit and decommission the satellite?
Potentially.
Or do you send up a refueler drone?
I don't know. I mean, that again, this article is about this thruster.
But
I don't know that they've answered that yet. Because, so, you know, the largest CubeSat or microsatellite company in the world happens to be Tesla. They have more CubeSats in space than anybody else. And I have not read anything or seen anything, but although I have not looked for it, you know, what is the lifespan of these, with the amount of fuel that are in them, what is the lifespan of these satellites, you know, and do most of them use the last remaining amount of fuel to deorbit and burn up in the atmosphere, or do they continue to just be rotational space junk, you know, in orbit? And that, you know, that's one of the concerns that we've been putting things up in space since, you know, really the mid-50s on a consistent basis. And, you know, orbit can get crowded. And it has been.
I was going to say, it has been. I mean, I guess my question is really, we have to have a reason to change technology.
Yeah.
What is it about this system that makes it better than what we're already doing?
What makes it better is it doesn't use volatile fuel, because, and I mean, it's not the, they're not doing hydrolysis where they're, you know, they're splitting the hydrogen and the oxygen away and then burning the hydrogen using the oxygen as the catalyst. They're superheating the water into steam, which also makes a gallon of water last a lot longer, because it, you know, they, moving from a liquid to a vapor causes it to expand greatly, you know, and it becomes pressurized, and that's how they're using it to propel things. It's very inexpensive. And it's simple, which means that it's more reliable than some of these other systems. And the other thing is I'm assuming they could scale the system up to do it on bigger satellites, but right now a lot of these cube satellites are put up into space and they don't have directional control or are able to avoid collisions or able to deorbit on their own, you know. And so I think this provides a solution for that is economically feasible.
No, I think the financial side of that is plenty of reason enough.
Yeah.
To do that, particularly at the scale at which Tesla's putting these things up.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's really the customer they're going after initially.
I wouldn't surprise me.
Well, now that you know, watch a lot of YouTube videos, partly on technology, just to see what's out there, partly, you know, some of it's how to, you know, in electronics, how to do this and electronics theory and why you know, if you're building this type of circuit, why it works this way and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of great educational resources out there. We could do a whole show on bridge rectifiers and inverters if you want, but that's getting really electrical engineering. but it's been exciting to see customers getting the Starlink satellite service in their hands. And it's exciting for me on a couple reasons. One, the technology aspect of it. You're getting internet anywhere in the world via satellite, okay? And I go camping, I can take it with me. You know, my internet, and it's true internet, like what you can get. It's not, you know, there's no bandwidth limit. There's no, you're not limited to 20 gigs a month or whatever. The other reason I think it's exciting is what it brings to the table from an economic standpoint. And from an economic standpoint, the Starlink now provides competition in every market. So you're not limited to AT&T or Verizon or Comcast or Spectrum as your internet provider for your home. You're now getting those type of speeds from a two-way bidirectional satellite system. And that becomes very important because without competition, there's no reason for particularly cable internet to want to be competitive. So let's move on from satellite and our little discussion on Starlink to the 2021 omnibus bill. Ugh. One of your favorite things in the world to talk about, right? Uh-huh. But what was interesting in the recently passed spending bill was a provision that seems to liberate the upcoming Europa Clipper mission at NASA from the SLS program. And what it was is there was a band-aid prior to this that the Europa Clipper mission has to be launched on the Space Launch System, which was NASA's old program for their heavy lift rocket, which SLS has been replaced by SpaceX at this point. And so now this Europa Clipper mission to Jupiter's moon, Europa, can now go ahead and they can start moving forward and planning based upon capabilities that they have that don't exist in the SLS program. I'm not entirely sure why the SLS program is continuing to run the way it's running, because both SpaceX and Boeing have already provided systems that are far superior than what SLS can provide.
This is all about government's favorite word, redundancy.
That's why you have Boeing and SpaceX. There's two suppliers. No single supplier.
We have four agencies that do the same thing.
With just four?
Well, you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I know. But I think it's exciting because now, this being said, part of this, the mandate on SLS to fly, or the Europa Clipper mission to fly on SLS, was because of two people. Representative John Culberson from Texas and Senator Richard Shelby from Alabama. And why is that important? Because Culberson, his constituents are Johnson and Johnson Space Center. Mm-hmm. And Shelby is Marshall Space Flight Center
in Huntsville,
Alabama. And he was also, he's also the chair of the, Shelby is the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. And the SLS program is headquartered at Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. So, but what's funny is that Culberson lost his seat in 2018. And so I think that's allowed it to change to where it was not being tied to SLS because there was one less person able to defend it. So, and Ars Technica wrote an article about it, and if they fly the Europa Clipper mission on a SpaceX Falcon Heavy, it saves the mission $1.5 billion. So I don't know that it would have stayed being tied to the SLS anyway, because SLS is heavy rocket, because the crew rocket part of SLS is gone. Boeing and SpaceX have won that. It's so far behind. And the fact that SpaceX already has the Falcon Heavy that they're using and reusing, I don't know that, you know, you could continue to go along in that state. Now, my curiosity, the one thing is about these space companies, like SpaceX and what Boeing's planning to do, they're maintaining. So what is interesting about this is that instead of NASA purchasing, you know, like the DoD would purchase 25 F-16s, you know, for the Air Force, and NASA is no longer doing that type of purchase. They're leasing the service while ownership is retained by SpaceX, and I'll say Boeing, but Boeing hasn't actually launched a crew yet. And so it's more like a freight service or a taxi service to the moon. SpaceX is the Uber to the stars. Yeah.
But really, that's...
But that's where they're where they're making the savings, though, because SpaceX, as a commercial company, understands profit and loss and how to do things efficiently. And the government, NASA included, they don't treat tax money as profit and loss.
No, and that's...
And so if something takes too long or there's a cost overrun here or there, they don't fight to fix it.
Yeah.
Because the people they have in charge don't understand profit and loss. I'm going to go on my rant here. The government needs to run, for the most part, on a profit and loss system and not like tax dollars or a renewable resource.
Oh, not only is it renewable, but it's expandable.
Yes.
Infinitely.
Yeah, my market has no
limit.
Yeah. Because that's why we got all of these programs that are behind schedule and they weren't innovative. Look how short a time SpaceX and even Boeing, who is what I would call part of the establishment Beltway bandits, were able to create their new systems and get them working. You know? I don't know. But
this is the same agency, though, that shut down the shuttle program and farmed it out to Russia. Russians.
I know.
So...
Who are pissed now because now they don't have a customer and their space program is going bankrupt. You know, because Roscosmos... although,
they didn't plan ahead either.
No, they did not. Now, I will say this. It's not like we're getting our $1.5 billion back. It's just SLS was taking money that was allocated to the Artemis program, which is our program to get people to Mars. And so now that $1.5 billion goes back to the Artemis program for now. First 100 days, we'll have to see.
I don't understand why NASA is still even in business. There's no...
A lot of government agencies...
Successfully privatized peace.
Yeah.
I'll give you my Tony Starkism for the day. There's no reason for government to be in the space business when we're doing it better and cheaper and better privately.
I agree. Well, and that's kind of interesting, too, because MSFC, which is... Now, there are functions of NASA that I see a reason to keep NASA around, but at a greatly diminished state. But like the development of product and the research and development of rockets and the building of rockets and all that, I just don't see that as part of NASA's mission anymore. That's SpaceX and that's Blue Origin and that's Boeing, you know, that's their bailiwick. But, you know, there are some functions like Marshall controls the basically they do the job of air traffic control for space flights. And they don't just do it for United States. We do it for all of our allies. So the European Space Agency, the Indian Space Agency, the Japanese Space Agency. The only people we don't do it for is China and Russia. And while we were flying on Russia, we were doing it for Russia. So, you know, I see that. Plus, I see a lot of the functions, other functions that happen. And I can see, you know, some of the space research functions, you know, like the Mars rover missions and those types of things staying with NASA. But
even those, are those really NASA or are they JPL?
Yeah, that's a good question too.
Thank you.
But the other thing that goes on too, well, that then begs the question is, are they not NASA or are they part of the National Science Foundation?
Wow.
Yeah. But the other thing that's going on at MSFC, but at Redstone Arsenal, where MSFC is located, is also... that's now been designated the new Space Command headquarters. So I'm wondering, and I know part of the reason that it was given there is because NASA is air traffic control for space flight. So how much of that is going to be taken over now by Space Command? Because Space Command's not going away. As much as everybody wanted to complain in Congress about Space Command being stupid, that was just to complain about Trump. Had nothing to do with the fact that they wanted to expand the military industrial complex so that they'd have another place to put people and spend money. And, you know, it's not like they're going to, because if Space Command was going away, that could have gone away by executive order day one.
But it didn't.
But it didn't. And I don't think it'll go away in 100 days or 300 days or 600 days. I think it's here to stay. That somebody was made, that there were several people who were made general officers / admiralty in Space Command who don't want to go back to being something else because there's no place for them
in the Air Force.
So, so here's the last topic I have for Episode 161. So, it is well known that the International Space Station program is going to end probably within the next 5 years. They're saying the ISS only has 10 years left at best before it has to be retired or undergo a major renovation. I know that there's other programs at NASA that are coming online to take over most of the functionality of the International Space Station. One of them being Gateway, which is a newer space station, so that we can have a waypoint to get from Earth orbit to space vehicles. Yeah, to the moon and to Mars. Yeah. And so there are several commercial entities who are trying to purchase the ISS from NASA. And there's
Why?
There's a startup called Axiom Space out of Houston, mm-hmm. Texas. The company was founded by the former ISS manager, Michael Soffredini, mm-hmm. who was the manager for ISS from 2005 to 2015. And they want to turn the ISS into Axe Station, which will be essentially a space hotel and resort. Now... you got it.
Now I'm all for commercialization of space, but let me.
How many? Well, the question is so. It's an interesting concept, and it's more of a, in my mind, it is more of a thought. Exercise than it is a reality. I don't know an investor who. a smart investor who's really willing to throw down for a space
hotel
and resort. They might throw down for a commercial space station. You know, to me, that makes more sense. We sell ISS, somebody else takes on the burden of running it, and renovating it and keeping the systems going, and it becomes a commercial cargo hub for space mining or, you know, something like that. But turning it into something where you're planning on making money, and they're saying that if they turn it into a resort by 2028 or 2024, that it'll be $55 million per person to stay.
For how long?
It just says, now I'm assuming that ticket price includes transportation to and from, but still. And evidently Tom's Cruise and director Doug Liman have reserved spots to shoot the first film in space on Axe Station. But, I mean, supposedly this year they're going to fly a crew of four private astronauts, which include Michael Lopez Alegria, who was a former NASA astronaut and who now works for Axiom Space. There's a former Israeli fighter pilot and two yet-to-be-announced space tourists aboard a SpaceX Dragon capsule for a short stay on the ISS. Dude, truth is stranger than fiction sometimes.
I wish them luck. I can't imagine having to go to the bank to get a loan for that.
Well,
I mean, they wouldn't have to do that, but I can't imagine pitching that to some investor.
Yeah. Either. Well, you know, it's only going to cater to... But that's typically how things happen, though, when we get to that point. You know, we laugh at it now because it seems absurd.
Well, to me, the most absurd part of it is this is a station that's outliving its usefulness. This isn't a brand new construction that's going to be a permanent fixture. This thing is done.
Yeah, well, you know, it says in the article, the couple articles that I read about it, that... you know, as modules age and they can't repair them and renovate them, Axiom is going to detach them and I guess try to deorbit them and then build new. So over time, you know, that is one of the advantages of the way the ISS is built, is that over time you can technically continuously renovate the station modularly.
The problem is that the oldest... Correct me if I'm wrong, and I could be, but the oldest modules on the station are in the middle of it.
That's very true. So two of the modules that Axiom actually intends to add at the beginning are replacement modules for those older modules. But you're still talking 2028. But if it has 10 years from 2021, those inner modules should be, I mean, the lifespan of that inner module is, it should be good till 2031.
I don't see ISS as a private venture. I just don't see it.
I don't see it as a private venture from the perspective of tourism. If they're getting private money to do this because they want to film a movie in space, that I understand.
That's not tourism. That's
in space. Yeah, that's entertainment. You know, and I doubt Tom Cruise is going to be of an age to really do that. I mean, who knows?
I can see him wanting to do it.
I can see him wanting to do it. Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, what's the script?
Who cares? I mean,
yeah, I made the first movie in space.
That's...
Yeah.
But really, but did they? I mean, how many IMAX movies have been made in space?
Oh, I know. Yeah, it is ridiculous. And I just don't... I know there have been dumber things. done. But that just seems like it would be really hard to get any kind of investor to give money, because the return on investment, regardless of what you do with it, is probably a negative number.
Probably. Likely.
If you broke even, that's probably the best you can get on return on investment. Meaning that you gave them the money and you didn't get anything back.
Even that's a negative number.
Well, I don't mean the negative number of where you give them money and then you still have to give them more money that you didn't anticipate giving them as a negative number.
That's how this program's being run already.
Wow. Let's government or private industry.
Let's privatize government.
Well, I've been saying that for a long time. Well, I think that's about it. And again, I'm Chris, and with me today was...
I am Matt.
And we want to hear from you, so please send us some feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.